Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Don't Quote Me. I'm your host, Orla Condon, and this week I'm joined by content creator Jen Morris. Coming up on today's show, has Taylor Swift found herself a new man in 1975 lead singer Matty Healy? Well, the evidence is very compelling. The Writers Guild of America are on strike, but what does this mean for you and your favourite shows? And Meghan Trainor made headlines again this week for sharing intimate details of her sex life with husband Daryl Sabara, but for a very good reason. In other news, Jen is filling me in on why everyone back home is talking about the second season of Kin. I'm sharing some styling tips in a segment nobody saw coming. And as Beyoncé prepares to kick off her Renaissance tour, Jen is predicting what fans might expect to see. Let's get stuck in. Okay, guys, we're coming to you a little bit crusty this week. It was the weekend I spoke about in my bottom paper a few weeks ago, where I had two weddings. And here to help me through this episode, talk about some of the various things going on in pop culture, Jen Morris. I'm so glad it's a friendly face. I'm so
Hello.
Glad.
You can How do this. You? I believe in you. I'm good. Oh, I'm good.
Good. I'm happy to see you. Yeah, wedding season is well and truly back. I had two weddings this weekend, one on Friday, one on Saturday. Congratulations to Lisa and Brian and Anne-Marie and Connor. A great weekend was had by all. But fuck me, I am tired. Jesus
Christ. We're just not built like we used to, you know?
Oh, girl. Like, I, so bad. I got a migraine during the first wedding and I had to go to bed. Thankfully, we had a room in the hotel. I had to go to bed, slept through the entire dinner. Then bounced back, came back, was there, right. So the lights were on at the end of the night. Great. I was like, this is a poor sign ahead of tomorrow's affair. But I don't know where some Holy Spirit came and blessed me with energy to celebrate my friend from secondary school. And you know what? It was great. But yeah, I need a week off now. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I need more time.
But like
off.
At least you had the hotel room. Like, do you know what? I feel like when you hit 30, okay, it's just like you need to get a hotel room in the hotel where the wedding is on, because you might need a little nap after dinner. You might need to refresh yourself and like you need to have access to all of your things.
Yeah.
I'm just not about that life anymore.
Do you know, like, all of those like pieces of expenditure that will just make your life easier?
Yeah.
I feel like as the years tick by, all that money just feels like, but I'm doing it's like an investment in my mental health and in my sanity. Worth it. So yeah, that was my weekend. How was your weekend, Jen? Did you get up to anything nice?
Not a bit. Lovely and relaxed. We went and did the Ring of Kerry last week and it was lovely.
Yeah.
Very wholesome with my mother.
Lovely.
So the weekend we did absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And it was great.
That's on the cards for me now next weekend. A bit of life admin, a bit of catching up on the shows, all that kind of stuff. Sounds good to me.
I'm just like, look, I'm waiting. I'm going to see Beyonce in 12 days.
Oh, Jen.
And I'm very excited. So I'm prepping as we speak. Apparently it's a 3-hour show. I need to be ready.
I am like, brace yourself, everyone who's going or not going, because Instagram stories is just going to be like Instagram, TikTok thing. It's just
going to be. That's the only thing that's annoying these days. I feel like we'll have seen 99.9% of the concert by the time that we actually go. But I don't care.
Yeah, like I don't need to go see Taylor Swift now. Like I know the whole set. I know the jumping through the stage. Oh, is she in the water? Like I know it all. Like I know it all. We'll come back to Beyonce in a while because we're going to discuss a little bit more. But and before we dig into the stories that I've told you about, there was some breaking news in the last 5 minutes in the Real Housewives space. I'm proud of myself that I've made it through 2 episodes on this podcast without talking about the Housewives. But Real Housewives of Atlanta star Kim Zolciak has filed for divorce from her husband, Croy Bierman. According to TMZ, the Real Housewives of Atlanta star lists April 30th as the date of separation between her and the former NFL star. Kim is saying that she's filing for a divorce due to irretrievably broken with no hope of reconciliation. She's asking for primary physical custody of the kids and joint legal custody. And she also wants spousal support and to legally restore her maiden name. The pair have been married for 11 years and have 4 kids together during that time. Recently, they've been in the press due to some financial troubles. They owe $1.1 million to the IRS in unpaid taxes, interest and penalties. And they also owe the state of Georgia $15,000 for unpaid taxes. From a few years back. Just a quick zipping through.
Oh my God, thank you so much. Will I tell you something?
Everyone on top of things, you know?
Is this a safe space? Okay.
I think so.
I have never seen an episode of Real Housewives. And I, do you know what? I feel like every time I see it, it has all the ingredients.
It is
that would make something I would love.
Yeah, 100%.
I've never dipped my toes in the water.
Do you know what? I was very intimidated, and I've said this loads of times, I was very intimidated by the Real Housewives space as well. There's so much of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's so iconic. There's so many people. There's all these characters. And I'm like, where do you start? There's so many seasons. And
what is the lore?
I need like a map, like some kind of guiding light as to how I get through this. And then COVID happened and they brought some series onto Netflix and we just started. And like, once we dipped into that first season of Beverly Hills, then we were like, oh, we'll go over to New York. Oh, we'll pop over to Potomac. Oh, we'll go. And now I'm like, I don't even want to think about how many episodes I've watched. Like in the space of like, what, 4 years, I've definitely watched about 1500 episodes, I'd say. Like, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. But I get the like hesitancy to dive in. Like,
it's
I
so
get
large.
It.
It's like Grey's Anatomy. I'm just never going to do that.
Have you never watched Grey's Anatomy?
No, I have like back in the day. But you know, people like, I saw like Fionnuala, like didn't she spend like 3 or 4 months like watching Grey's Anatomy? She like dedicated herself, was like, I'm going to watch every single episode. And
Was that not ER?
Oh, it was ER. Yeah. Same, but different.
ER of a Sunday night. Sunday night ER, 9:30 after the news. Oh, I was so excited for it. I used to love ER. Grey's Anatomy, yeah, I'm the same. I watched it when it was like RT2 Tuesday night, 9 p.m. followed by Prison Break.
Oh, yeah. Do you know? A great mix.
A great time in history, I think. Right, let's dive into our first story of the week. Taylor Swift and Matty Healy.
Mm-hmm.
Are they, aren't they? What's going on? There's been other dating rumors. This all comes off the back of course, her split from Joe Alwyn that was announced last month. And in the last kind of week or so, all of these reports about her and the 1975 frontman Matty Healy becoming a couple and him being at her gigs. Did you see this coming, or were you, even though they were kind of linked before, I was still
Look, I didn't see it coming, but people are weak for Matty Healy. I'm sorry. I personally don't get it. Okay.
Don't get it.
Especially when like Ross, the bass player, is just there standing there all like 6'2" of him, like an absolute god, right?
Sorry, I love that you just calls Ross.
Me and Ross go way back, right? Like he's actually so unreal. Like, do you know what? if anyone has listened to my pod and paper when I was on it, I have a big thing about men with big thighs. I love a man with a big thigh and he has great thighs. I love a pair of thighs. Yeah. But I did not see it coming. But then, they're in the same space, you know, but what is mad about it is this whole, like, it feels like a fanfic. It feels like a story written by a fan. There's these videos going around of them, like, looking at the screen. And I think they said, this is about you. You know who you are. I love you. They, like, mouthed it to the camera. Like, it is wild.
This feels... it's giving the time in her life when she was with Tom Hiddleston. Is that his second name?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, Hiddleston. I had to quickly Google that. It's giving that moment in time where it's like, are they together? And it was like so like documented mm-hmm. and like all of these. He was wearing the like I Heart TS t-shirt. And
yeah.
It just felt very like heavy very quickly. And I'm dipping, like I'm tiptoeing through this story because I'm very aware that like Swifties are a hardcore mm-hmm. bunch of bitches. And I'm not meaning any offense, but it just has kind of sprung up out of nowhere. And now, like you say, they're like miming that they love each other. He's yeah. like going to numerous gigs, like in a row in one weekend. And
he's just like his hand on his heart. Like he's really like into it. Look, more power to him. They're in the same space. Look. They obviously have very like similar... mm-hmm. you know, crossovers, but like the fans did the sleuthing then and they found the pictures of her from the concert with Denise, with his mom, Denise Welch.
Oh, iconic imagery. Iconic.
And then she came on and performed at one of the gigs as well. She was a guest performance in like January. So like maybe they've been together for quite some time.
Maybe. Now, the relationship, they were together for like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. Quite some time.
That only came out last month that they'd split, but the reports are that they ended things back in February. So it's not as tight a turnover as kind of people are speculating. And then it kind of got a little bit more salacious in the last kind of week or so when the Taylor Swift fans, again, like you said, like these eagle-eyed fans finding all the little tidbits, found out that her inner circle had unfollowed Joe on Instagram. So like her brother, Gigi Hadid, the Haim sisters, like all of the kind of T-Swift squad. Mm-hmm. This also came around the time that she was seen having dinner with Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds, who were very good friends of hers. And it was said that immediately after that dinner, Ryan Reynolds also unfollowed Joe Alwyn on Instagram, which is interesting because he has noted how nice a guy Joe was in previous mm-hmm. interviews, how talented he was. He's spoken about him by name kind of over the years. So this seemed like incredibly shady that like mm-hmm. all of these celebrities in Taylor's kind of orbit were quickly unfollowing Joe on Instagram, which doesn't add up to like, things ended well, you know, like
quote
unquote, because it's like why are your friends unfollowing him as quickly mm-hmm. as they can? Like it just seems very sus,
especially when they all have like public profiles as well. Like they're going to be aware of the fact that people are going to be watching like who's following, who's unfollowing and things like that as well.
No one is more aware of that than Taylor Swift. Like she so deliberately plans all of these details because she knows that she is leaving crumbs for everybody. So mm-hmm. I just, so even that adds to the kind of weight of what they're doing.
But you know what? Ultimately, she's dead right. Do what you want. Like, do you know what I mean?
I would be a bit raging as well if like all my friends were still following my ex for 6 years.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, you're my friend.
Yeah. Like, I own you.
Like
you are mine.
You're my side. I get custody of you in the separation. I'm sorry. Like that's how this works.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. Like it'd be interesting anyway. I just think, look, like they are so random to me. So random.
So
but
random.
Like then again, I think in the arena that they're in and like they're both musicians, touring musicians, massive fans, like a lot of crossover in their audiences. Yeah. Like it kind of makes sense.
It does make sense. And I mean, it said that Jack Antonoff is the reason that they reconnected. Mm-hmm. He's the lead singer of the Bleachers, a huge producer, was very, very involved in 1989, which is personally one of my favorite Taylor albums. Mm-hmm. And he also worked with the 1975 on their recent album. So it kind of makes sense that like they would come back into each other's space. Mm-hmm. But they did date like almost 10 years ago. That picture that's going around is her with Nick Grimshaw and Maddie Healy on like a night out in London. She's rocking the short bob. It's like such a moment in time for Taylor. It just, and it's as bizarre now as it was then to think about the two of them together.
I just thought they were chums.
Well, he denied the rumors, didn't he? I remember at the time he was like, no, like these things get blown out of proportion. Like we swap numbers, but like everybody does in the same, when we're in the same industry mm-hmm. and we're kind of mates or whatever.
And like when he's on stage just shifting fans left, right and centre, like I suppose a woman might question how serious things are.
I certainly would. But then you're saying, like you said, Taylor was seen mouthing, I have it here, says this about you, you know who you are, I love you, before singing, performing Cardigan at a recent show. I think that was in Nashville. And then Matty was also caught on camera at one of the 1975 shows, as he was drinking a bottle of wine, the reports also listed, saying the same words. And that was only like last week.
It was so intentional. Like, I'm sorry. So like, it wasn't even like a little... You know, sometimes you read things and you're like, oh my God, this is such a reach. And like, oh, this a stolen look, or like the way they brushed past each other or whatever. But this is like, he, if you see the video of Matty Healy mounting these words, he is like pointing into the screen. He's like, this is about you.
Yeah.
Whereas like, I feel like Taylor is definitely a bit more coy. Yeah. She's kind of smirking, whatever. Now she said what she said and it's very clear. But like ultimately, I think his was like the most damning, that it was like, okay, that is definitely exactly what they're saying. Because I know initially as well, people were kind of saying that, is he going out with Phoebe Bridgers? Because they're on tour together. But after this, no, they are together. I think they are together.
He did come up and perform with Phoebe Bridgers, who was opening for Taylor in Nashville. So he was on stage during the Eras tour. So that could have been maybe like why he was there. But he was there multiple nights. He was singing along to all of her biggest songs. I think it just feels so jarring as well, because she famously for quite a few years had very public relationships with many men in Hollywood and faced an onslaught
huge
of criticism
for it,
for dating, the shock as a woman in her early 20s dating all of these amazing men that she that came into her life based on her career and all this kind of stuff. And she has spoken about it in the years since, about like going on the Ellen DeGeneres show and having to like pick and mix between guys, and how she felt very belittled by it and all this kind of stuff. It's like, it must have been awful. And like, you don't see celebrities in the same way be treated like that anymore, because I think Taylor was just torn apart for this. Like, the narrative around her was that she was this kind of like fussy getting with all these men and like throwing herself. And it's like, this was across like, you know, eight
to 10 she's just
years
a young woman dating, like as most people do.
Yeah.
You know what, Joe? I think at the end of the day, where my, I think my confusion in this whole thing is, I feel like Matty Healy and Taylor Swift don't exist in the same cinematic universe.
No,
are not. You know, so it's this crossover.
Especially given, like you say, the kind of public persona he has had in recent months and this kind of, you know, TikTok thirst for him that has kind of grown and grown and grown over the course of the 1975's recent tour. It just feels like in a different space entirely to where Taylor is. And I think because she kept her relationship with Joe Alwyn so private.
Yeah.
And she and he seemingly wanted it that way. He seemingly did not want to be in the public eye. He even used a different name when he was credited for writing some of the songs on her recent albums as a different, like, he really did not want to live their relationship out in public. And I understood that based on the kind of scrutiny she faced in previous relationships. But this feels so jarring then, given she was so private in her previous relationship. This is like, within a week, we have like dozens and dozens and dozens of stories and pictures and, you know, things to report on, because they're living it out quite publicly.
I suppose, though, at the same token, I know like he was an actor and all that as well, but like, I suppose they're both public figures.
Yeah.
Whereas I suppose like Joe Alwyn might have felt that if they were really public about their relationship, that he'd become like Taylor Swift's partner as opposed to his own person. Because like, I know this is like really random, this just came into my head there, but like, do you remember that video of Ariana Grande and she's like, I'm not Big Sean's ex, I'm not like Niall Horan's potential like secret partner or whatever, I'm Ariana Grande, and if that's not good enough for you, I don't know what to say to you. So I think like maybe that was why he wanted to keep it so secret, in that like a fear that his whole career and personality would just be eaten up by this like mega superstar. Yeah.
And like, to be fair, like when they first were dating, he was relatively unknown. He wouldn't have been a big, and I mean, like really now he is still, in comparison to Taylor Swift, relatively unknown. He is not as well known as her. He is not a worldwide name. We obviously know him mainly from conversations with friends, and like a couple of other roles like that. But like, His star is definitely not as bright as Taylor Swift's, nor does he face the same level of kind of coverage as she does. Mm-mm. So you could understand exactly what you say, him not wanting to be intrinsically linked to her, you know, even if they did stay together, you like wanting to create his own path and his own story and be his own person. I get that. But it felt like she definitely bought into that, and she also appreciated the value of that private relationship at the time. So this almost feels like somewhat of a rebellion. I mean, there was reports saying that she wanted to kind of her and Matty were going to, you know, announce their relationship on stage and do a performance together during the tour. Now that hasn't happened. And again, like, these are all just like reports, quote unquote.
It's like from, walk the line.
Yeah, reliable
we got
stories.
Married in a fever.
Give us that duet, please, Eras tour. But like, it just feels like people are feasting on it, and for good reason, because we haven't got this kind of story from her in quite a while, because she has been in a solid relationship and she has kept it private.
Yeah. I think that's her prerogative. I think, like, look, absolutely, at the end of the day, like, if she wants to date 25 people, if she wants to be with someone for 6 years in private, or like now, if she wants to just shout about how in love she is and everything, yeah, I think she's dead right. I don't know. I feel like the whole narrative around her is so difficult. Like, I feel it's so difficult to watch because, as you said, like, people definitely don't get it as hard as her anymore. But like, yeah, you know, there's even clips of her being interviewed and she's like, your man is like, the woman says, oh, I think you're going to go home with more than awards, like lots of men. Yeah. And she's like, no, like, I'm not going to go home with loads of men. Like, this idea that she is just this loose woman in Hollywood or whatever, yeah, like, it's awful. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And she was so young coming to fame that, like, everything was under a magnifying glass. So like, if she's madly in love with Matty Healy. I couldn't even think of his name there. I was in my head, I was like, Ratty Healy is like that what they all call him on TikTok. If she's like madly in love with him and wants to shout it from the rooftops or mime it to her fans, I think more power to her.
I guess it also comes as a surprise because there was rumors going around as well about, are you an F1 fan? I feel like you are.
I've watched Drive to Survive.
Drive to Survive. That's what I mean.
That I'm, oh yeah, was this like, I think I saw this. I think, is it Sergio Perez that she was linked to?
No, Fernando Alonso.
Fernando Alonso, yeah.
There was like rumors she was also dating him. There was reports that one of her songs was written about him. Mm-hmm. And like, him and Formula One fucking capitalized. They ran social content after social content with Taylor links. I saw videos of commentators like commentating on races. I don't get the F1 thing, like dropping all of these like, oh, he's driving very swift and all this kind of like,
oh right, yeah,
into this narrative. And that was kind of all a buzz there for like, it felt like ages. It was probably like 2 weeks, and then this Matty Healy stuff came out and it was like, but what about Fernando Alonso?
What about poor Fernando?
Wait, what's going on? I'm so confused. It's just so funny that all of a sudden we're back in that kind of like, I don't know what, like 2010, 2012 kind of space where it's like, she's linked to this person and this person and this person. And while there's definitely substantial evidence linking her to Matty Healy, I mean, there's pictures of them in the back of a car.
Look, I'm sorry, as I said, there's something there, even down to like this whole thing on the stage that locked it in for me. Why are they both doing the exact same thing?
Yeah.
Like, and the fact they both said, I love you. I'm sorry. They are dating Swifties and 1975 fans. If you feel sad, he is never going to love you. He loves Taylor Swift and that's it. That's it.
Oh God. It also, there's another story that was kind of swimming around as well, all kind of in the last week, again, when she was linked to Matty Healy, trying to kind of paint Joe Alwyn as this kind of cash grabbing, nasty ex, and kind of linked to this story of all of her friends unfollowing him on social media. And I saw a lot of headlines, like one headline, I think it was in The Sun, said Joe will be raking in the fortune for years off the back of Taylor Swift. And I thought it was interesting, the pivot, based on how Taylor was always kind of seen as this person to kind of, you know, leeching off of these famous men and, you know, using them for music. I thought it was interesting that now Joe was kind of being put in that space. Basically, like I said, he wrote a number of songs with her on recent albums under a pseudonym. But like, obviously then with that comes the great royalties that you're going to get 4 years to come. He will easily make a five-figure sum every year from his contributions to Source Told the Sun, writing six songs for albums as big as Taylor's, guarantees a healthy income stream for life. Which, like, sounds very begrudging until you consider the fact that there are tons of writers on those albums, yeah, who all deservedly so get paid for their work on those albums. Sorry, he's not leeching, like.
He's not leeching. And isn't it terrible, like, you said five figures, and in my, I had to think in my head, how many figures is five? Like, what's five figures? I was like, is that a lot? Or is that, like, but, like, yeah, I think
it's
it is.
Not, I mean, it's also not a huge, I wouldn't have thought that would be a huge amount in, yeah, royalties.
But
like,
five figures could be 10 grand, but it's probably more than that. But, like, yeah, see, look, that's five. I just counted in my head.
You were there, like, yeah, like, I just thought, like, it was
interesting. I doubt he got in a relationship to her and was like, I really hope that I get to co-write some for music and get a couple of grand.
Oh, I'm gonna rake it in here on these songs. Like, I wonder, yeah, what he got paid for Conversations with Friends. Like doing a quick Google there now. But I just thought it was funny that, like, that was the narrative, that he was like, it felt like he was like thieving from her, you know, that he was, mm-hmm, he was coming for her money. And it's like, no, he worked, like, he worked on this music. He deserves an earning.
I wonder what happens in, like, that situation, right? Like, so, like, obviously Taylor Swift is, like, so wealthy, right? And she can do whatever she wants. She can buy whatever she wants, go wherever she wants. Like, if you're in a relationship with that person, like, do you just assume that, like, they're going to pay for you?
I don't, like,
I would say that'd be a huge disparity. What's the word?
Disparity. Sorry, there's an ambulance outside coming to collect my crustacean body. Like, oh God.
Like, there's going to be, like, a huge disparity in money. Like, obviously, in, like, most relationships, there's going to be someone who earns more money. Like, it just, it is what it is. But it's, yeah, never going to be like, I make a sensible 30,000 a year.
Yeah.
And you are a multimillionaire. Like, I feel like that's rare, you know?
I always think of that interview with Jennifer Lopez and Leah Remini, who are, like, really good friends. Mm-hmm. But obviously, like, Jennifer Lopez is J-Lo and Leah Remini is Leah Remini. And they're doing an interview with, like, Good Morning America or someone. And the interviewer is like, oh, who picks up the check? And Leah Remini is like, well, if we're going to, like, a really fucking fancy restaurant and there's a group of 15 of us, Jennifer. If we're going for lunch, me. And it's like, yeah, that's how it should work. Like, it's, yeah, like, you know what I mean? It's like, you live to your means. Just Googling here, I can't find his salary for Conversations with Friends, but his net worth is reportedly $4 million. But Taylor's is $400 million. Cool. So, like, there is a disparity there. But, like, if my net worth was $4 million, I would be, like, probably not blown away by getting, you know, 90 grand a year for royalties. I mean, it's a nice little bump. Yeah. I'd happily take it. Hello, employers. But, like, it's just the way they're writing it feels very...
If anyone wants to give me 90 grand a year, like, literally anyone, I will take it. Like...
Anybody. As I've said on record, I'll sell feed pics for that price. Like, I'd do it for the check.
Right.
Absolutely, no bother. Quite a nice, actually, segue unintentionally into the writer's strike, which is also, mm-hmm, kind of dominating headlines at the minute. It's not a very sexy pop culture story.
No.
It's not enjoyable for anyone to read, but it is a big news story because of the knock-on effect it's going to have on us TV fans. Now, Jen, I'm sure, as we are somewhat of a similar age, you remember the 2007 writer's strike and the impact.
I remember.
Like, I was a young girl watching telly too, yeah, late at night. I remember it because I remember, mm-hmm, shows like Grey's Anatomy, like Desperate Housewives, all of those big shows around then, taking these really lengthy gaps at really, mm-hmm, terrible times because the writers were all on strike and they couldn't film without scripts or without tweaks being made on, yeah, set. And it became this really, really big pop culture story at the time. And while I didn't understand, like, what it was about,
no,
and why they were, I definitely understood that, like, why is Desperate Housewives on a fucking break? I'm owed six more episodes of this series.
I want to know what happens.
I want to know.
Like, I can remember the first strike and, again, not really understanding it. And, like, let me just be honest with you right now. I didn't really understand it this time either. So I had to look up articles and explain it to myself like I was five.
Yeah.
Like, but I needed to know exactly why they were striking.
That's also, like, part of the problem, right? Like, it's part of the reason they're striking is because, like, mm-hmm, they're undervalued. And because we, the public, undervalue them because we put all of our adoration in the leading stars and some directors and some producers, that these people then are devalued and then aren't getting paid what they deserve to get paid for the work that they're doing.
And I think, like, as well, like, what I saw was the huge problem is, like, back in the day, they would have, like, really depended on syndication to make their money. So, like, if your show that you worked on was bought by, like, Channel 4 or Comedy Central or whatever, like, you would be guaranteed an income. Like, we're talking about Joe Alwyn there. Like, he's guaranteed, like, five-finger income every year. And it helps creatives to work and thrive and things like that as well. But on streaming services, they only pay once for the rights. Like, there's no, like, you don't get, like, your residuals constantly because they pay this, like, fixed fee. So I think that's, like, a huge issue. And I think, like, as myself and yourself are both working in the creative industry, like, we both know how difficult it can be at times to get paid, which is, like, a nightmare. So I think that, like, I completely understand where they're coming from. People consume so much content and so much entertainment these days that people should get paid. Even the person on the bottom rung of the ladder that's an intern, like, should be getting paid a fair amount for working on a project, you know? Yeah. So I totally understand.
And that's exactly it. Like, last year, there were nearly 600 original scripted series that aired last year, new series, and that was a new record. And that's part of the problem. There is so much output and the studios are trying to minimize the number of people on it, creating what are called mini rooms, which is less writers for shorter time periods to try and churn out scripts much quicker. But what happens then is those scripts go to production, and any changes that need to happen on set due to, you know, anything due to just, like, director's decisions, cast decisions, maybe a change in the climate that might affect the story that they're trying to tell, can't be made because, or can't be made well in the best way for the show, because their writers are not being paid to be there to kind of guide the process through. And it does have a knock-on effect on the results. I mean, the biggest example of the kind of failure of the 2007 strike is the James Bond Quantum of Solace movie, which was filmed during the strike. And because of the fact that writers weren't there to help on set, Daniel Craig and the director Mark Foster at the time had to try and save the movie themselves and had to make a number of rewrites. And many people would say that Quantum of Solace is one of the worst Bond movies as a result of that. It's the same position that the House of Dragons series is now in. The second series script has been finalized, but they haven't started shooting. And again, if anything they want to change, or if actors want to kind of amend the text to suit what they believe works better for the character, those changes can't be made because the writers aren't there to support those changes. There's also this fear, weirdly, which again, I didn't even realize until kind of looking into this further, the fear of AI and what that could do and how that could impact creatives. And
it is terrifying.
It's terrifying. I mean, we've discussed this, myself and Cassie have discussed this, like, off air, about, like, how it is really scary that there are tools being built that do the job that we are also doing, and how people can kind of see them as, like, oh, well, we can save on labor and just use this tool, and how that's, like, a false way of looking at this kind of technology.
Well, something I saw recently, like, that was actually, like, a bit frightening was, I don't know, did you see the person on Twitter that did the Joanne McNally jokes?
No.
They asked, and even Joanne McNally was like, I think I need to go sit down after this. They basically went on to ChatGPT and said, can you write me a joke in the style of Joanne McNally? And the joke, I swear to God, if you even the cadence of it, everything was like a Joanne McNally joke. So, like, it was just mad to think that, like, that could be, you know, used to create things. But ultimately, like, the struggle is there. I read some stuff about the AI situation as well. And the struggle there is, like, AI is not this infinite, like, creationist tool. It actually just searches the internet and finds things that will fit their, like, whatever their narrative or what they want to create. So they're actually plagiarizing, but they're plagiarizing in a way that it won't come up as plagiarizing, but they are still taking work. So if you want ChatGPT, just say, for instance, to write a script, like, it's going to pull from different areas on the internet and inadvertently take work from creatives.
Yeah.
Like, even more so. So, like,
but this
it's just
is the issue,
scary.
Right? Like, it's the kind of view of chat, of AI tools, of, like, oh, well, the tool can do it. But, like you say, the tool relies on human content and human editing and human creativity. to give you an answer that matches your needs. But without that human content, it's not going to give you what it needs. So it's this thing of like, yeah, look, we can use it for different things, but it's never going to substitute for a human using creativity to write something, to, you know, tell a joke, to even like writing music and all that kind of stuff. Like it's, but it is very scary. And for people who are, you know, picketing now and not in a very strong position, because at the moment they're kind of falling at a weird time when the autumn TV schedule is still kind of far enough away that the studios aren't feeling the pinch right now to get the writers back in the writers' rooms. It's like having something like AI tools that the studios could say, well, look, we'll just use that to get by, just puts it's you scary. In further. It's very scary. And like you say about creatives and payments and all that kind of stuff, as much as people like to think, you know, that these jobs are glamorous and like, oh, well, sure, you're writing for Netflix and that's so exciting and that's what you have to complain about. These people are, you know, probably not on full-time employment, probably not getting a monthly salary, probably, you know, invoicing for money and then not getting paid for months. You know, it's like, it's not guaranteed work. You're not on kind of a, you know, a 6 month to a 12 month contract. It could be a rolling week to week contract. You just don't know. And that kind of, as much as it is exciting, I would imagine, to sit in a writer's room and write for a Netflix series, for example, that has huge budgets, has a really exciting cast, like is being really hyped. Like we all know that like job security is sexy as fuck when you get to this age. Like it is a beautiful thing.
I love like, a bit of job security.
Oh,
now. A
pension. Oh, she's delicious. Like that is, you know what I mean? Take the glamour is worth nothing. Like I'm sure you get this all the time about like free products. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, sure, you get free products. And it's like, I would prefer to be able to go out and pay for my own free products and you know, do all that stuff and have security. Like, it's just this kind of skewed vision of like the entire space and like what it is to actually work in it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, 100%.
We're both in full-time employment as well as being creative.
But so, I worked for 3 years like freelance. Yeah. So like I did have the experience of it. And like, yeah, you're trying to get like regular gigs that are going to come in every month and things like that as well. But like it is very stressful. Like and like obviously there are perks to it and things like that as well. But like at the end of the day, like it is, you are all things to all people. Like I always say, especially I suppose in my industry, which was like kind of beauty content creation and stuff like that, I always say to people like it's like a magazine, like except that I'm the editor, photographer, videographer, like I'm payroll, I'm everything,
HR.
Like that's I'm HR, she's a bitch, I know. But like you're everything to, so like that's the same with like a lot of these writers and stuff that, you know, they are working gig to gig and like, you know, a show that they're working on could get cancelled or, you know, they could get cut from it. And even that as well, these mini rooms, like I read an article talking about these mini rooms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not allowing younger talent to enter the space either, because if the writers' rooms are being kept really small, it doesn't give people the opportunities to come in and hone their craft and develop their skills. And also the writing can become really stale because it's the same people and over and over and over again. Yeah. So I think like there's a larger issue beyond streaming. There's a larger issue. So
yeah,
I really hope that they get what they want, because they're not asking for, I think the pay increase that they're asking for is like 3 or 4%. It's like it's very small.
Yeah, it's pretty minimal. And like studios are cutting back. Like they have had kind of a disproportionate growth to what they've invested, but they're still making a lot of money. And like when you think of like what the big stars are making now, obviously like the front of camera stars will always earn significantly more than the crew, but like the money is there. And like,
yeah,
your show is only as good as the people who write it. And as much as you can have insane talent, like, you know, like Florence Pugh or someone is incredible, and you're like, oh, she's so talented. She's only as good as the script that she gets, but then the writer that she gets to work with to be like, how can we adapt this to do whatever? So yeah, it's just like fair pay for fair work. And I mean, it looks like as well, like there's thinking that the Screen Actors Guild and the Directors Guild of America, their contracts are also expiring soon. So, I mean, the Writers Guild are hoping, well, not hoping, but they're kind of wondering, will they also join the picket line and also go on strike, given that they're kind of in contract negotiations? The last strike lasted for 100 days, and a lot of the members are predicting that this could go on for a lot longer, given, as I said, that their leverage is not super strong right now because of the way the scheduling is and where they fall in it. But it's just, it's the same reason why these strikes will come up every kind of, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, with changing kind of consumption comes changing demands, and comes a system that is not prepared for those demands.
No.
So then writers have to go back out and be like, okay, the system has changed. We now need to be, you know, like.
And it's like the most maddening take when you see people belittling the job and stuff like that as well. Crazy. Because like, I'm sorry, we all sit down at night and stuff our faces and watch Succession or watch a series or stuff like that as well. Like, you're consuming the content, like it's more important, like culturally, socially, everything, like they are involved. Like, I think like to belittle their jobs and tell them to get over it, like, I think that's so like maddening.
Yeah. And like, we're consuming more than ever. Like, I genuinely would watch a new series at least once every 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, same. At least brand new series. Like, and like, I just don't remember. I don't remember ever when I was younger, kind of watching, you know, traditional telly or whatever, ever having that much choice. And now it's like, you have endless choice. Like, there's so much that you're like, I'm just not getting into that right now because I just don't have the time. And it's like, there is an industry of people that are creating all that content for you, but because it's everywhere and being, it's just being totally like undervalued. But yeah, so that's a big story at the minute. It is already affecting the late night talk shows and kind of SNL. That's where we're seeing it kind of perk up already, with episodes already being cancelled and put on pause. But it will eventually hit scripted series kind of over the next few weeks, months. We'll hear of delays.
I've seen that they're saying there's already going to be delay in Stranger Things, that the series of Stranger Things has been pushed already.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll just be interesting to see. But like, look, at the end of the day, people deserve to be paid for their work. It's just that simple.
Full stop. Full stop. Okay, another story that came up over the last week. And I have to say, as I admitted to you, Jen, when we were chatting, I also fell into the trap of headlines here and was like, what's going on? Like, what is this about? This is kind of cringe. Like, why would you be talking about that? Meghan Trainor, who has been kind of in the headlines a little bit as of late because of what she's been saying on her podcast, working on it. A couple of weeks ago, she got in trouble, as you flagged, about comments she made about teachers, saying fuck teachers or something like that. She had to then walk that back because naturally there was a huge backlash in the US about the kind of the stress.
Yeah, especially when teachers in the US are like on the front line, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ.
So she was like, she was in a lot of hot water over that. She did a fairly weak apology, leaving the episode up there to gather listens. Just kind of, it was just kind of a big miss from her.
Yeah.
She had another episode last week, as happens in podcasting. And she was just talking about her sex life with her husband, Daryl Sabara, who was famously the young fella in Spy Kids. And still terrifies me to see that he's an adult, because he will always just be
an adult with a big willy, apparently.
God.
A massive William.
So this is what the story was, right? Like, so the statement that made headlines that everyone will know about was that she says, quote, it's gotten to the point where I'm like, is it all in? And he's like, just the tip. And I'm like, I can't do anymore. I don't know how to fix it. And this started to have kind of churned out all these headlines about Meghan Trainor oversharing, and she's, you know, talking about her husband's big member and all this shite.
Next to her brother.
Next to her brother. Loads of people on Twitter and social media being like, lucky you know, good man, Daryl. Like, you know, I wish I had the same complaint. Like, all this kind of stuff, right? Like, this really kind of like juvenile like chat, right? But then it turns out that most people, including myself, because I don't listen and I didn't read beyond the headlines, she was talking about her recent diagnosis with vaginismus and how it has affected her sex life and her enjoyment of sex, and how her whole concept of sex is very different to many people who see it as something that is pleasurable, and that's just not her experience given her recent diagnosis. For anyone who isn't aware, it's a psychosexual condition which causes the involuntary contractions of the vagina and can lead to pain during penetrative sex. It is the body's automatic reaction to the fear of some or all types of vaginal penetration. And one in 10 women are confirmed to be impacted by the condition. So like, no small number of women, like it's a large percentage of women. And she said on the podcast that sex is incredibly painful for her, that she doesn't necessarily enjoy it in the typical sense that other people do. She said that line about kind of like, is it all in? Like, obviously being in a lot of pain. And she said beyond that, she said, I thought that every woman was walking around, you know, was in this pain during and after sex. And I was like, you know, are you just telling me that I could have sex and not feel a single bit of pain?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so interesting that I just was surprised that the story was boiled down to that one headline,
mm-hmm.
and that all of these headlines did not even clarify it at the end. Like, I've worked for a lot of these places. I know how to create a clickbaity headline. I know how a sentence like that is an easy win for someone on a shift that's like, I need something there that's going to do good numbers. That is an easy win. But you'll always try and put in a, like, you know, Meghan Trainor discusses, you know, painful sex with husband. Is it just the tip? But and here's the reason why. Or so, mm-hmm. there's something to allude that there's more to it.
I think, look, right. And we fell into the trap as well.
We did.
What does it all come down to? Misogyny. It's all wild. Like, at the moment in Ireland, there is an ad for Viagra that plays every 2.5 seconds where, like, and it's like a little quick ad. You can get it over the counter now, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember the uproar about the ad where people were being shown how to use tampons correctly?
Yeah.
That they wouldn't be uncomfortable. So I think, like, when things like that happen. Now, what I will say is, when I was watching the clip first, I was a little bit like, oh my God, she's sitting beside her brother talking about her husband's massive willy. And I was like, Jesus, like, it's a bit intense, like, right? Regardless of whether she has a condition or not, it's a little bit like, oh God.
Yeah.
Because, like, the good Catholic Irish guilt was kicking in.
It's just like, oh.
But I think ultimately, like, when you see all these clickbait headlines and things like that as well, like, it does come down to, like, the fact that, like, the media is very misogynistic and women should, like, keep those things to themselves and not talk about it. When in reality, like, I'm sure there was a lot of people that could relate to that. Or maybe, like, in her case, she kind of went her whole life thinking that, like, sex was just really uncomfortable and, like, wasn't to be enjoyed. But, like, then when she found out she had a condition, it was so different. So maybe there was someone listening that, like, heard that and said, oh my God, that's me. I didn't even know there was a condition there. And now it's going to go get checked. So I think, like, there is a positive to it. But again, you fall into the trap of being like, oh 100%. God.
And it's like what you said, like this isn't like, you know, this isn't like a gold badge for Daryl Sparrow. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like a well done Nate. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that he's like unreal at sex or he's massive downstairs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about that. Like, it's about her suffering from a condition that, regardless of what he is packing, means that mm-hmm. she's not enjoying sex in the way that it should be enjoyed. No. And it's her, I suppose, dressing it. I would imagine, kind of seeing her bits on TikTok and stuff, her dressing it in a way that is kind of funny and lighthearted mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, leaning into those kind of tropes, but also like, but this is why. And like, this mm-hmm. is why now I feel so much more, not comfortable with it, but able to accept it, because at least it's like a condition. It's that feeling of like, what is wrong with me and why am I not, like, why am I not feeling what I'm meant to be feeling in this moment? Why is my body not doing what it's meant to be doing? Mm-hmm. And I can imagine actually having a diagnosis and a name and an understanding for why it's happening. It's not a deliberate thing of you or something with your brain. Mm-hmm. I imagine that must be such
and a even methods thing. Like, I think they were talking about, like, they use like meditation kind of things that I know she did say they tend to fall asleep, which I was like, God, exciting, sexy. but like, that there's ways, they're finding ways to get through it. But 100%, like, I think that, like, fair play to her for talking about it, but also I think, like, this, like, there's a lot of loose lips just happening all over the place these days. Like, celebrities love a podcast.
Pardon the pun, like.
Pardon the pun. But like, I didn't even realize I said that. But I think, like, in the last, like, year, we've seen a lot of celebrities just, like, absolutely air out everything. Yeah. Like, there's no bit of mystique anymore.
No.
But that's, I think that's expected in a lot of cases now. Yeah. They expect them to be like a very open book about like their whole lives. Like,
yeah. And I think in this case, it was like for good reason. She was talking mm-hmm. about something that like will hopefully have a positive effect on, like you said, other people who listen and might relate, or it might just raise some questions that might make them go to their GP or whatever. But like, I know obviously we were speaking about Gwyneth Paltrow as well and her appearance on Call Her Daddy and talking about her sex life with previous famous partners mm-hmm. like Brad Pitt and Ben Affleck. And it just always makes me think of, do you know, in Mean Girls, where Janice Ian sees Tina Fey's character, whatever, mm-hmm. and she's like, oh, seeing a teacher outside of school is like seeing a dog walk on its hind legs. And like, honestly, seeing like Gwyneth so Paltrow talk about like how Ben Affleck was like technically very good. Oh. I was like, oh, like as much as like they're both like desirable people and I'm so glad that they had a desirable sex life, I'm like, I don't need to know this Gwyneth. Maybe it's Gwyneth as well, though.
And
maybe
also,
I
just like, know too much about Gwyneth. She's in love with Brad. And like, I did think that was quite funny when she was like, is what's the girl that does Call Her Daddy? Is her name Alex? Is it?
Alex, yeah, yeah, Alex Cooper, yeah.
She was like, do you think any of your exes have bought your vagina candle? You know, she's like famously has that candle that's like smells like my vagina.
Oh,
like,
God.
I don't know, maybe.
Honestly, if I could earn a book doing that, I would happily, 5 figures, I would happily do that.
And her daughter was there when it was recorded as well. It was like, I don't know. Just like, I do think that maybe it is the Catholic guilt, but like, I just like, if my mother started talking about like her sex life, I would like literally be like, that's enough life for me now.
Isn't it so funny,
I think
though,
I'm like, done.
Isn't it so funny though, like when we think about like how like pop culture and social media and access and all has changed, like even in our lifetimes, like mm-hmm. think about in the 90s, like we didn't know a lot about celebrities. They were very closely guarded. Mm-hmm. Like we knew what was kind of like, we knew like very boring shit, but we weren't getting like salacious details.
No,
we weren't getting snaps of every move. We didn't know like what, like as soon as they had kids or what their kids were called or what they looked like. Then with like the rise of social media and like access and people needing to be on those platforms for like promotional purposes, it was like we knew everything. So you saw like the rise of the Kardashians, the rise of all these stars who were willing to like bear all and tell everything. And like, you know, you can have full access to our lives. And now we're kind of seeing that celebrity movement take kind of ownership of that space and deciding where they want to put themselves in it, whether they want to remove themselves entirely from social media, keep themselves closely guarded, like, you know, Taylor Swift and Joe Alleman's relationship and how they made that active decision to be like, no, this is us. We're not giving you access. Or they decide to, you know, like Gwyneth Paltrow did, own that space, which I'm sure 20 years ago, if she was asked the exact same questions, she would have been very reluctant to
like
answer.
Media trained, like,
yeah.
Do you imagine her answering like fuck, marry, kill 20 years ago on
imagine?
Like a massive platform? Like,
but and I suppose the difference would have been that it would have been like Letterman asking her,
mm-hmm.
and it would be an older man belittling her to being, you know, the sexual conquest of these big Hollywood A-listers. And I suppose in this space, Alex Cooper is very, you know, she asks all these questions, you know, that's what you're getting with her. But she's also, her guests are always on a pedestal. Like they're obviously more important than she is. They're more famous than she is. And I think it felt more like a conversation over too much wine. And it felt like Gwyneth Paltrow was very much in control of what she was willing to share. I suppose she's also in a different point in her life. She obviously feels...
like that, sorry. That's just it for me. Every time I see her now, I'm like, I wish you well.
Oh God.
But like, never that's forget. It. Like it's funny that, because like I kind of like, I'm sure I'm not the only one. I kind of feel like Gwyneth Paltrow is an absolute dose, right? Like anytime I see her talking about like drinking soup for 10 years, I'm like, oh, go on. More power to you. Stick that egg up your fanny and have a great time. Like, live your life, right? But like, watching the clips, I didn't watch the whole thing, right? I just watched some clips from Call Her Daddy, and which is like my life now. I just watch clips on TikTok, and that's what I do. But I felt that she was really like, she came across really well. Like she came across like really approachable and nice and funny. And I was like,
you know what it's like? Do you know when you leave school and you meet a teacher like in a pub like years later, and it's like, how are we gonna, are we still now, are you still Miss, like, or can we call like, or is it Anne, like are we going Anne now, like are we, and you have a bit of a casual conversation. Now obviously they're not saying, I remember when I was riding this fella back in the day, but like it feels like a moment of like, oh, like we're allowed to kiki about this
now.
Like, enjoy this. But it just, there's something about Gwyneth Paltrow that like honestly Like, if she donated millions to charity, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, Brandon. So, like, I don't know about it. Like,
it's like the Bono effect. Like, and when people find out, the Irish people are like, oh, not Bono again. Like, it's so funny. Like, he could do anything. And anything. Like, literally, you'd be like, oh, off he goes, saving the world again.
All right, Bono, we get it. Like,
chill out.
Right, Jen, it's time for our loves of the week. First up, we're going to go to something that I have not watched a second of. I put it down to my postcode, but I know that everyone at home is loving this because I see it all over Twitter. I see lots of people talking about it on Instagram. Kin, I watched the first season and I did really like it. Season two,
so good.
Has it just finished or is it finishing?
It finished last night. There was a massive twist in the episode and everything like that, which annoyingly was given away by the continuity announcer.
Oh,
the continuity
announcer
was like, warning for blah, 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 blah. Because obviously they have to give trigger warnings now. And then for the whole episode, you were like, something's going to happen, which was kind of annoying. And a lot of people talking online were like, oh. Like,
I'm just going to say now, spoiler alert, because Jenny, I feel like you should talk a bit more openly because hopefully most people who are watching it will have watched it. But spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Massive spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the season finale of Kin, one of the main characters commits suicide in the episode. And it's kind of like a really shocking moment. Like, but they said that there was a warning at the start for language, violence and suicide.
Okay.
So it was literally like, oh, like they kind of knew. And there was two characters in it that it, like I was in my head was like, it's going to be one of them that does it. Like, not that they were like, it's not like a depression thing. It was more like their back was up against the wall. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
But a lot of people were saying that at the end, like it kind of took from that big twist at the end.
Yeah.
Where like, again, massive spoiler alert, where like a main character gets killed by someone and then they kill themselves.
Yeah.
So like, it was like this huge twist at the end. It like, no one saw it coming except for everyone was kind of waiting for it.
And I suppose like that would have been, that I don't think that was like a casual slip. I presume that was like discussed. Like
Oh yeah, 100%. Like I would say like it had to be. Like, but it was literally the last second of the show. Like I mean like the last second. But I understand it has to be done.
Yeah.
But it is, I will say it's probably the best series that Ireland, that RTE have done since Love Hate. If you're into that kind of crime drama thing. I do think it's very funny they're called the Kinsellas and not like you know. But it's just a really, really well done series. Now they do it in partnership with Bronze Studios, which is like AMC. So they do like The Walking Dead and things like that as well. So it feels like a really gritty series that you've seen before. Like it feels like a Breaking Bad. It feels like so good. It
definitely
good.
Like even when I remember in the first series, there was a scene where they were going to dinner at someone's house. And I think it was filmed in like Dunleary or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And like Dunleary just looked so gritty. Like it just looked so, like we've seen like obviously Dublin and Ireland and stuff on film before. But like you say, it's like watching it through the lens of like a studio that has a very specific look. And it just looked so different to what you normally see of Dublin on RTE.
But it's just, I think it was very, very, very good. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, will this be affected by the writer's strike? Because it's like US written, US and Ireland. But I don't know, but I must say it's really good. And even like the last few episodes, like I was just on the edge of my seat constantly. And like, it's a long time. And I'm sorry now, RTE, you're great. But like, it's a long time since I watched something from RTE that really had me like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And it's unusual as well because it's episodic. It's every week. You don't get to watch ahead. You don't get to binge watch it. You just have to like wait. And I feel like that was like, I suppose, an added part to it as well. But it ended. It had such a massive twist in it. And like, just, it was so good. It's honestly so good.
Because I remember the days of like Love Hate. Not maybe before the last series when anticipation for it was still piping hot and it was still like, you know, everyone was still pretty much alive or there was a lot of them still alive. And I remember going back to college on a Sunday night and watching it on a Sunday night, like being home for it on a Sunday night because it was that weekly thing. And it was so big and it was so mm-hmm. good. And it was so gripping. And it like, it was definitely one of my favorite shows, mm-hmm. rivaling some of the like big
US. We had
US
to wait a whole series like to see if Darren died. And like,
and it's just mad when you think of like, say like Oscar season this year, when we had like, what, like six people up for best actor and actresses nominations. You had endless Irish people nominated for cast and crew. And like, there is no shortage of like, I know this sounds so cliche, but like there's no shortage of talent. There's no shortage of like people in Ireland to create this good stuff. It's just like not coming out on RTV yeah. channels. Like that, like you say, is in association with AMC. You know, what's another one? Like even like the Young Offenders and stuff was with BBC. Yeah. Like Derry Girls went to the UK. Like all of these big shows have come out. It's like, it's just such a shame that there's not more like fully Irish productions that are screening like week to week.
Yeah, but like look alike, do you know what? In the UK, like they pay their TV license or whatever, right? And I know obviously the pool is much bigger, so they're getting yeah. a lot more money and things like that as well. But like look at the things that they make. Like the BBC are incredible for series. Like their series are unreal. Like yeah. especially for the Maz. The Maz love the BBC series.
Love them.
But like
I love them too. I'm always a winner for the BBC series, mm-hmm. to be fair. I'm such a Ma.
Love it.
Oh,
but
yes.
Like the UK series are always so good. Like, so it's great yeah. to see a series like that is Irish actors. Like, even like the only thing, right? The only thing, and this is oddly specific, is right. if you're anywhere in any way aware of Dublin and like where things are in Dublin and things like that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, oh, like as in they'll walk in somewhere. I think at one point, like they walked into what's that place across from the Tree Arena? Oh, I can't think. That hotel across from Tree Arena.
Oh,
they
yeah,
walk
yeah.
in there, that where First Dates is on. They walk yeah. in there, they go off the escalators, and then they're in Sophie's.
Oh my, and it doesn't even like, match. The downstairs doesn't even match. No. Like,
I was like, that's not the same place.
I just always, the worst example of it is, and for anyone who hasn't seen it, like, watch it for the laugh. Do you know Leap Year with Amy Adams and
yes, I've not seen it, but I know, yeah.
Oh, Jen, it'll drive you mad. She comes, okay. it's a leap year. Her boyfriend has not popped the question. He's working in, he's on a work trip to London, I think.
Okay.
And she's like, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna propose on the leap year. And then her flight is like directed somewhere else, and she has to get like a ferry, but like she's like coming from Kerry and she's like walking, and next thing this guy picks her up and she's in like Wicklow, and you're like,
lovely, yeah.
bitch, like you'd be looking a lot worse if you're walking.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
It's outrageous. It's so bad. The Irish accents are so bad, but
oh
it's
God,
so
excellent.
Funny. It's such a good, like, I'm hungover with a bag of chips type watching. Do you know what I mean?
Love it.
Really, really good. Really, really good. Speaking of being hungover with a bag of chips, I got a lot of questions. This is a really weird love of the week for me, right? But I got a lot of questions this week because I was quite active on social with all the wedding snaps, right? I got a lot of questions about a very specific item that I was wearing. And I'm very happy to share it because I have such positive reviews. It was what bra I was wearing. Okay.
Very important.
Very important, right? Very. I don't know. You don't need to disclose, but I'm of like not a small cup size, not an extremely large one, but a strapless bra is a fucking, it's a feat to find a good one. Carla Kay coming through clutch with the recommendation. The Bridgerton bra. Oh my God. Shout out to Michelle McCormack for naming it. Do you have this?
I have this.
It's fucking magic. I have never in my life gotten more compliments from my cleavage, and like in a really nice, like in a really nice, respectful way, and all from the girlies in the bathroom being like, I wanted to ask you, where's your bra for? Like, what are you wearing? Got loads of messages on Instagram being like, they're lifted, they're secure. Like, what? It was incredible. I know Carla has it listed on her Instagram highlights. I double checked before coming on because I went on there to buy it like a week and a half ago.
Her power.
But her power knows no bounds. Like, honestly, Carla, publicly, thank you so much.
Save lives. Like,
unreal. Like, unreal. It's so out of sorts for a recommendation on this podcast, but I just couldn't let the episode go without being like drawing people's attention to it. I'm so glad you're also on board.
That's like, so funny. The minute you said strapless bra, I was like, I wonder, does she know about Carla's strapless bra?
Iconic. Like, honestly, And Michelle McCormack perfectly named it the Bridgerton brat. It's exactly that. Like, because I'm rewatching Bridgerton at the minute because I'm obsessed. And literally I'm seeing them all with their like high little titties, their perfect little cleavage, perfectly lifted. And I'm like, wow, I can achieve this too.
Like, you can achieve this at home. And like, it's really like, comfortable, honestly, as well. I think it's because it's like a longer bra. It's almost like a bralette, but it's strapless. Yeah. Like, it sits or like a miniature little bit corset. Lower. Like, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It has boning. Now, no, like, no, say, my titties never look better.
Taking it off now was a sweet relief at the end of the night. But like, no more than like any other bra would have been. And like,
A little bit more.
But I was like, it was worth the effort and the pain, because I was like, they were up, you know, they were present and active all night. And
so
I'm
happy for you.
So happy for me too. Honestly. Right. We have to quickly discuss before we wrap up. Beyonce, tour is kicking off next week. You are going to see her. Where are you going to see her? London?
So I'm going to see her in Edinburgh and then Warsaw. So I'm very, very excited.
Okay.
It's kicking off on Wednesday. Oh, Beyonce said see the world. And I was like, say less. So I'm really excited. I basically got tickets for Club Renaissance in Warsaw, which is like at the end of the stage, there's a little circle I am in the circle.
Wow.
So I'm very excited about that.
Everyone glued to Jen Morris's Instagram stories for all the content.
So the first show is on Wednesday the 10th. And basically, like, there's been some leaks. Some people have been fired already from the Friends Arena in Stockholm because they were like leaking information. They were taking videos, everything. Yeah. So
I will say, like, working somewhat adjacent to this stuff, like, there's a tight lid on it. I'm excited for it to start rolling and for us to start getting a glimpse of like what the vibe is, like what she's going to perform, what the set list is going to be.
Costuming. I just wanted to do Renaissance from start to finish. Then she can do all the old bits.
Yeah.
Like, this will be my 20th Beyonce concert.
Stop it, Jen.
Like, I've never
seen her live ever.
Incredible. Her shows are amazing.
I'm hoping to grab tickets because last minute tickets generally do come up. I know there's some still left. So I do think I might get tickets last minute for London. Because I honestly, it's more the FOMO. I can't be arsed with seeing every fucker on my Instagram there.
Yeah.
And me being like, I wasn't there.
Look, she hasn't toured in 7 years. This is her first tour. And apparently the show is like 3 hours long. Cause I was like, when I saw Taylor was doing a really long show, I was like, she's going to do a long show. Yeah. But like, because of that, she may not tour for another 20 years. Like, she just will go into hiding.
This is my fear. So I'm going to try and get there. I'm going to try and get there. I like that. That was my thing as well. It's like, it's been so long. You know, it's going to be epic. Like, Homecoming was so amazing at Coachella because it was like the anticipation for what she was going to do. It was such a thought out creative. Mm-hmm. And again, like you say, you don't know when she's going to tour again because she's already set the precedent that she's not always going to tour.
And she's working with the same company that did the Formation World Tour, which if anyone has seen or was at that, it's the one with the big monolith. Like, there was a massive screen that like kept turning. So she's worked with the same team. So if anything, the staging is going to be incredible. She just dances her ass off. Like, she is incredible. Her dancers. I feel like it's going to just be so like fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun show.
Yeah. And it's going to be everywhere. Jen, I hope you have the best time. And I'm really looking forward to seeing this on your stories. Thank you so much for being here today. I apologize for how croaky I sound. But I'd like to think that we held up pretty okay.
We did. We did good.
Yeah, we got there. Have a great week. Thanks for being here.
You too. Thanks to you. Bye.
Thanks so much to this week's guest, Jen Morris, for joining me on the podcast. And thank you to you guys for tuning in each and every week. You can find us on Instagram at don'tquoteme.podcast and on TikTok at Orla Condon. You can also find us on all of your favorite podcast apps so you can listen whenever and wherever you like. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode and all of the latest pop culture news. We'll talk to you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.